Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest on today's show is Amy Munns, recently named the 2026 Pet Sitter of the Year. Munns was bestowed that award by Pet Sitters International, or PSI, founded in 1994 and considered the world's leading educational association for professional pet sitters and dog walkers. Presented annually, PSI's Pet Sitter of the Year Award recognizes one member who exemplifies exceptional professionalism, pet care expertise, and a commitment to PSI's global standards for professional pet sitting and dog walking businesses. The award is widely viewed as the highest honor in the professional pet sitting industry, with Pet Sitters International counting members throughout the United States, Canada, and more than 15 other countries. Munns is the owner of Leash for Lease, Inc. in Paulsbo, Washington, launching the company in 2001, leaving a corporate career to do so. Now, nearly 25 years later, Munns leads a team of 10 employees and provides pet sitting and dog sitting, services to approximately 150 clients throughout Kitsap County. The company is known for its highly personal approach to customer service and strong community involvement, while Munns makes herself available to consult with and sometimes mentor those leading newer pet sitting operations. As PSI's 2026 Pet Sitter of the Year, she will serve as an ambassador for the professional pet sitting industry throughout the year. I look forward to hearing the Amy Munns story, obviously with an emphasis on her company, Leash for Lease, and the ethos she's cultivated there over a quarter century, and much more when I speak with Amy Munns in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Meanwhile, coming up later, I'll speak with Natalie Connor, the owner of Mutts and Martinis, a dog-friendly sports bar in St. Petersburg with a water park and four off-leash play zones. Mutts and Martinis regularly hosts an array of events, including the Small Dog Race Weekend happening January 24th and 25th. We'll learn more about the Small Dog Race Weekend and Mutts and Martinis itself when we talk with Natalie Connor a bit later in the show. Right now, though, let's meet Amy Munns, the 2026 Pet Sitter of the Year, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Amy Munns, Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for having me today. Thank you. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, and congratulations on being named Pet Sitter of the Year. That sounds pretty spectacular.
Yeah, it's been pretty great. Yeah, it's a great honor. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so we'll kind of get into the award and Leash for Lease, your company, which of course is being recognized really as part of that as well, in just a moment. But let's first hear some of the Amy Munns story. Hard to imagine someone starting a pet sitting business, I guess, really, who isn't a true animal lover. So let's talk a little bit about you and animals, for example. What did animals mean to you as a kid?
Yeah, so starting loving animals was just something that it was always there, right? I just always had an attraction and a love for animals. Growing up, we had a couple dogs. Our very first dog that we had was just kind of a neighborhood stray that my mom named Pooch. And he kind of, you know, this was back, of course, in the 70s. So, times were a little bit different back then. But yeah. He kind of adopted our family and lived in our yard. And we would feed him and give him fresh water. And, of course, and then he was just always around. And that's kind of
am I to understand, Amy, sorry to interrupt, that he didn't really live in the house?
No, he didn't. Back then, my mom did not allow dogs in the house.
Okay. Well, that's an ironic twist for what you're doing at this point, but we'll come back to that maybe as well.
For sure. Yeah, like I said, you know, like, remember, I mean, just thinking back, you know, times have totally changed from where animals now live on our couches and sleep under our covers.
Yeah.
You know, back then, I mean, sure, there was people who had dogs in their homes, but it was also common to just, you know, a dog might live in your backyard, and that's kind of where your dog lived. It just, you know, now they've evolved into full-on members of our family. But he just kind of, he adopted us and would just hang out with us whenever we were there and come and go. And I think he just kind of roamed the neighborhood. And then eventually we got a dog and then another dog. And I had hamsters and maybe a couple goldfish growing up. I always had some sort of pet. I always just loved being around animals. It was just kind of, you know, part of who I was.
And where did you grow up? Was this in the state of Washington back then, or?
No, I grew up actually in San Antonio, Texas.
Ah, okay.
And moved out here into Washington after we got married. We moved up here. He was in the Navy at the time, and the area where we live, there's a big naval base out here, so he was stationed out here at Bangor, Washington.
So when those later dogs entered the picture, at what point did they move into the house?
Yeah. So Bandit was he's my growing up dog. We got him when I was about 11, I think. I was in third grade. And he was, this was before Doodles. They didn't have the Doodle name, but he was a sheepdog poodle mix that my mom's friend's dog had little puppies, and she came home after visiting with her friend one night and said, "Oh, I want to get this little dog." And he was just, you know, a little ball of fluff. And he was the best dog that you could have for growing up. He was friendly and happy and easy to train, and he loved my mother. Like so my mom progressed into letting him into the house, but not on any of the furniture. But
well, Bandit made some big progress, though, it sounds like to me.
He did. And then he always would sit like right at her feet wherever she was. Like he was her person, or she was his person.
For sure.
And he just loved my mom. He was just a great dog. And then he lived till, I think he lived till about 15 years old. So he was quite, you know, he had quite a full life there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so who was responsible for walking Bandit?
Back then, mostly me and my sister and I. So we would take him for walks or play with him in the yard. We, you know, taught him a few tricks. And but he was just kind of our just house dog. He was just, at that point, we were starting to evolve into, you know, he was part of our family.
He
hung out with us all the time. He was always there. He had some funny little antics, I guess. We had in the kitchen that's where we would keep his water and food bowl. And he would carry a mouthful of food, like kibble, over to the carpeted area and spit it out and then lie down and eat the food on the carpet. And then he would go back to the food dish and get another mouthful and come back and spit it out. Having not chewed it, just like, you know, placed it on the floor.
Yeah.
And then would lie down and then would chew it and then, or, you know, eat it there and then go back. And that's how he ate his meals all the time. He was the funniest thing.
Wow. Well, I can see that putting a little bit of a backstep on the progress dogs had made with your mom, because I wouldn't think hauling over a big bite of kibble every back and forth for each meal necessarily was her favorite thing
I don't know. We all kind of thought it was a funny little thing that Ben did, just kind of quirky little thing.
So it was entertaining,
And we don't know why he did it. It was just kind of his quirkiness that he did, you know, his little personality. So
you guys, you and your sister, sounds like, look after walking Bandit, et cetera. Because I was going to ask, you know, for generations, neighborhood children have walked dogs belonging to, you know, other neighboring families just to make a few bucks or just because they love dogs so much. So
right.
I was just wondering if by any chance you were one of those kids who, in addition to Bandit, maybe walked any other dogs?
Not too much. Not that much. I did a little bit in college for, like, family friends when I would, I would stay at their houses and, you know, take care of their dogs and their pets when they were out of town kind of thing, but not too much of a, of that, like a neighborhood.
Okay. I thought we might have sort of a foreshadowing of, you know, leash for lease there possibly if there was any, extra walking besides your
not at that young of an age. Yeah. But like I said, like in college, yeah, I totally did that. Yeah, sure. I would do that for family, friends, and kind of because it's easier then when you're young and you can, you know, I was living at home and going to college and there in San Antonio. Yeah.
And so at that point, was there a time where you had your own dog either after you graduated or shortly thereafter? Or when it, in other words, when did dogs kind of re-enter your life more directly as your own?
Yeah, so that didn't happen until my husband and I had been married for a couple years, and we actually our first pet as a couple was a little hamster, and her name was Peanut, and she was you know just a little powder puff hamster, so cute, and and so she was perfect because I think back then our first apartment we weren't allowed to have pets like animal, I mean like a dog or a cat, but we could have caged or like that type of pet. But then we moved and to Virginia and we were stationed out there for a little bit and that's where we got our first dog. And she was a greyhound shepherd mix and we got her. Yeah, we got her from a local rescue there. Her name was Gussie, and Gussie Marie, actually. And she.
It's good to have a middle name, if just in case. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, all my pets have middle names, actually.
Oh, great.
Yeah, yeah. So we had her, and that's really where I kind of really got into like. I mean, she was ours, as you know, my husband and mine. So she was totally our responsibility. So, you know, we took her to basic training and obedience classes. We had to learn how to work with the dog because when, you know, growing up, my parents pretty much took care of all that. I was young when we were house training Bandit. But when we got to Gussie, you know, my husband Tim and I, we worked on getting her house trained and getting her trained and taking her for long walks. She was, she had a lot of energy and she was a runner. She liked to just run and go and take, she could run really fast.
I'm sure so that greyhound part of her mix probably kicked in, right?
she liked to run. So, so we had to keep, you know, we kept her active and kept her entertained and, you know, challenge, give her things to do, things that she was such a smart dog and she was so easy to work with and train.
Yeah. Cool.
For our first dog, that was a really good one to start with.
All right, let me let folks know, we may have tuned in a bit late. This is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did tune in just a moment or two after the show started, my guest is Amy Munns, owner of Leash for Lease, professional pet care and Paulsbow, Washington, recently named the 2026 Pet Sitter of the Year by Pet Sitters International. If you'd like to ask Amy a question, maybe you're looking for a dog walker or a pet sitter and want guidance on that process, what to ask, what to look for, etc., please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. All right, well, let's kind of move ahead a little bit, and maybe you could describe your... you talked about going to college. Maybe you could describe your academic training and degrees a little bit and the job or jobs you undertook in the wake of that training.
Sure, yeah. So
because I think that sort of figures into our bigger narrative, if I understand things correctly.
Yeah, kind of. How it kind of all evolved into where we are today.
For sure.
So like I said, my husband was in the Navy, and we got stationed out in Virginia, and then we came back to Washington. And all this time I was still in college. It took me a while with all the, you know, moving and getting married and what have you, you know, taking time off and here and there. It took me a little bit to finally finish college. But, my undergrad is, I have a bachelor in business with an HR or human resources concentration. And that's from the University of Washington out here, which is in Seattle.
UW,
and
right?
What's that?
UW.
Yep, UW. Yep, that's what we say out here.
So I was going to school here. So when you, so I have, business degree, but I was working in banking and then I got into kind of recruiting. And out here in Washington, we live, we're not really a suburb of Seattle, but we live near Seattle. There's a body of water between us, the Puget Sound, and a lot of people commute via ferry from where we live in Kitsap County over to into downtown Seattle. And that's what I was doing. So so working like I said, in banking and then I got into recruiting. So I would, work with temporary employee entry level jobs and then placing them on jobs within the city. And then the job started to kind of get kind of boring or not great, just not as challenging. And I was ready to kind of start looking for something else. But that commute that makes it a 12.5-hour day. Like, there's just no way to make that a shorter day. So while
there's no way around Puget Sound, I guess.
No, well, there is. You could drive, but yeah. I mean, it's not as far as commute.
Amy, I don't know if you're moving around at all because your phone's dropping a little bit in and out of the conversation. So.
Oh shoot! Okay, no, I'm not moving. But
oh, that's weird. Okay.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, no, let's hope for the best.
Yeah, I forgot where I was.
So you're talking about how the commute started to kind of get to you.
Yeah, so that was just a long day. And when my husband would be deployed on, he was on submarines out here, and my days were so long, I would, I was calling on, because I had a couple dogs at the time. Now I still had Gussie, and then we had added Chloe, another little dog to our family. She's a little blue heeler. And so I was having to ask friends and neighbors to come over and let them out in the middle of the day. Because like I said, that was a 12-hour day and I just couldn't get it any shorter.
Yeah.
So, and there was no way for me to run home in the middle of the day to let them out. So I kind of, when the job started kind of feeling like, oh, I think I want something else, I started thinking like, gosh, I can't be the only one around here who needs to let their dogs out midday. So that's where Tim and I started talking about it and said, yeah, let's do this. So we did. We started, or I did. We put, came up with a name and got a business license and looked into getting insurance. And that's when I met, or that's where I learned about PSI or Pet Sitters International, joined them, was able to get insurance and a bond through them and get some, make sure I was covered in things. Cause you always want to make sure that if anything should happen, that you'll be able to cover those situations. And then, gosh, I think back, and that was like 25 years ago, and, it's hard to remember, but smartphones hadn't even come out yet. We were still using MapQuest, and not everybody had email back in 2001. Mm. So it was new, and I was made homemade flyers that I just posted all over bulletin boards around my area. And, I made homemade business cards, same thing. I just, pinned them up everywhere and handed them out everywhere. And eventually it just started to grow. People started calling and it's been great ever since.
So let me ask you this, back when sort of job was seeming a little less interesting and the commute was definitely seeming looming large and just problematic, it sounded like, over time. When you first realized you might need to change your professional life, was the escape hatch kind of that you pondered, hey, I just need to do something else? Or was it specifically even then, I want to start a pet sitting business?
I think I've always wanted to run my own company. I knew that I wanted to do something on my own. Mm-hmm. And I think it just kind of worked out that since I had the need also, I just kind of assumed other people did too. So I, it kind of evolved into like, hey, there's this need. I have it. I'm sure other people do. Let's see what we can make out of this kind of thing. So
yeah.
I don't know if I was even really wanting to look for something. I always just knew that I wanted to run my own business and do my own thing. So when this kind of idea and need came up, I just thought, well, let's just jump on this and give this a try.
And to what extent do you feel like your HR and other kind of business related training was significant, especially as you were launching your new business?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I have to say, my degree is in business. And well, I and just taking just basic business classes like accounting and finance and marketing, that all played a part of everything because I do it all like that in my business. And that's what I like about it. I like all aspects of my company. I love dealing with the animals. I love meeting all the different our clients. I love working with our team. But oddly, I even like the admin side of stuff. I like working on systems and creating different, you know, standard operating procedures. And I like working, doing my accounting and, you know, tracking my invoices or my expenses and seeing reports and those kinds of things. And so all my training and education really helped all that. I mean, learning how to do accounting, you know, work in accounting systems or and knowing what reports to look for and look at what, you know, to help with revenue or just costs and expenses, marketing ideas and and that kind of thing. Like, yeah, it's just kind of all of that helped. My education was huge in that aspect.
Yeah, you were sort of uniquely prepared for starting virtually probably any kind of business that you had decided to start. You would be really well equipped with that training and background. But sounds like you really put this kind of training and experience to use right off the bat. And when you first launched the new company, were you just doing everything yourself? Was it just you for X amount of years? Or
it was. I was doing everything. So I was doing the admin and the business side of stuff, and I was out in the field as a, you know, or on the road kind of thing, taking care of all the animals. Managing my calendar, my schedule, going to meet new clients, and I was doing all of that. But eventually it got a little bit, well, where we are too, it's semi-rural kind of, like, it's getting more developed now, but we're pretty spread out. So it's not like a dense city where it's like block after block of, you know, houses or condos or apartment building kind of thing. So just driving around the county or the area, you know, takes time. So as I was growing, I noticed that there was some pockets where I could use some help. So I reached out to, my friend Laura. She was my first person that I brought on as my team, and then just kind of brought on different. In the beginning, it was mostly friends that, you know, like, hey, you have some free time during the day. Would you be interested in doing this? And I know you love animals kind of thing. So so then we just started kind of building from there. And then eventually got to the point where I was actually advertising for people to join the team and that. So over time, it's just evolved. And the nice thing, too, is over time, I've also met other pet sitters in the area. And that helped us, that helped all of us because we were all kind of doing everything. But once we started meeting other pet sitters or I started meeting other pet sitters in the area, I could refer to them for areas that either I just didn't have a big concentration or a big presence of clients and say, oh, you should use this other person. And then we got to being really good about referring to each other and, you know, just connecting and networking and what have you. So that part has been huge too.
That's great that there was that kind of level of cooperation rather than when there might have been a different set of circumstances, been more competition and sort of, say, hey, I'm not helping Amy with her business. I got to look after my own business.
100%, because you can totally get into that, right? Like, yeah, people just really competitive. Like, I don't want to help you. Why would I do that kind of thing? And I'll take all the business. But that was never like that. I remember this one other pet sitting, Karen and Jan, they had... it was Karen's pet sitting service, and then she retired, and then Jan took over, so it was Jan's pet sitting. And I just remember when I first met both of them, they were a couple, and they ran their business together. And I just remember Karen telling me, she's like, there's enough business for everybody. And I've always kind of carried that with me, and I feel that still today, even as pet sitting has grown and the you know, there's more pet sitters out there. I just feel like there is. That's just kind of been my MO too. I just really, truly believe that.
Well, also it seems like probably over the same period of time, almost directly coordinated, there's been such a huge growth in people getting into pets and having animals in their home, and far cry from the what you described in the early days of your family. But I mean, people really love pets and have sometimes multiple pets. And so, again, if they need help walking the dog, or if they go away somewhere or whatever, there's probably ongoing and greater need for people that do what you do.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that the industry has grown in the availability or the amount of pet sitters are out there, but also just the level of care and the type of care that's expected nowadays. Like, yeah, like back in, you know, back when I was growing up, you know, you just left your dog in the yard as a big bowl of food kind of thing. But now, no way. We these dogs or pets are just, you know, I joke a lot. Some of the ways that my clients take care of their pets, sometimes I'll say like, oh, when I come back, I want to come back as your dog, you know?
the royal treatment, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the other pet sitting business, Jan and Karen, and they each had their names whenever they had their business. It was so-and-so's pet sitting. So I was curious about the origin of your name, because that's a kind of a sharp contrast from so-and-so's pet sitting or so-and-so's dog walking. What's the origin of the Leash for Release?
My husband came up with a name. We were just kind of bouncing around names, and Amy's Pet Care or Amy's Dog Walking, that did come up as a suggestion, but it just didn't. And, you know, again, back then in 2001, I remember having ads in the yellow pages listed in the white pages. Remember the old phone book? And you always wanted a beginning of the alphabet name of your company, right? So that it would be in the beginning of,
the
listing. Yeah, right. But it just never flowed or rolled off our rolled off our tongues as easily. And we came up with other things, but Tim just it just came out. He just said, "What about Leash for Lease? Like, you know, we have a leash that we, you know."
Yeah.
So
no, it makes perfect sense. It's just kind of unusual in that realm, and probably that's all the better that it is unusual in that realm.
And I think it's a little bit of a tongue twister too, which hopefully is a little more memorable, you know, even though it's harder to say sometimes. You know, it also kind of sticks with you.
Yeah, no, for sure. I've probably already said it wrong once at least, but I'm trying my best. So this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Amy Munns, owner of Leash for Lease, Incorporated Professional Pet Care in Paulsbo, Washington, recently named the 2026 Pet Sitter of the Year by Pet Sitters International. If you'd like to ask Amy a question, you're invited to join the conversation, or just even offer a comment on pet sitting or any of the things we've touched on so far, or a question you might have. 813-239-9663. Email dj@wnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. So at what stage, you already made reference to it earlier, but just so I have this kind of more of a timeline, but what stage did you join Pet Sitters International, and why did you?
I joined them right away when I first started my business back in 2001. And honestly, the main reason I joined them back then was because they worked with an insurance company called Business Insurers of the Carolinas to offer pet sitting specific insurance.
Mm.
And I had called around because, again, with my business background, like training and education, like you learn about liability and why you would want insurance and stuff. And the reason why we do is because we're working with animals and things could happen. You know, they could, if you have multiple animals in a house, they could get in a fight, or, you know, heaven forbid you're out walking the dog and it reacts to a squirrel and snaps out of its collar, and now he runs away and gets hurt or something. And this way that you're covered under the, you know, taking care of those animals while they're under your care. So I called other insurance companies around and just to see what kind of insurance is available out there. And there really wasn't back then, except this one type of policy that the business insurers offered. That's the name of their company. Mm. And I think back then at the time, you could only get the insurance through them if you were a member of PSI or Pet Sitters International.
Okay.
So at that time. And then just by having that, we got all the benefits of being a member of Pet Sitters International. So
and what are those benefits? Obviously, the insurance is crucial.
Right.
But what are some of the other benefits, not counting something monumental like being named Pet Sitter of the Year, which I'm sure is kind of like the biggest benefit that you could possibly imagine. But just generally, day-to-day, what are the virtues of being a PSA member?
Yeah, so, well, it has evolved over the years, too. Just having been a member for 25 years, I've kind of seen it evolve as well.
I'm sure, yeah.
But, yeah, for sure the best thing is being named Pet Sitter of the Year. Like, that's been pretty great. but other benefits are they are high into education, and not just education on how – it's kind of a two-pronged thing where they do they want you to – you know, have a good, successful business. So they'll do education or, you know, webinars or trainings on accounting practices or marketing or, you know, those kinds of, you know, any kind of business practices. And then on the other side, they do pet care or, you know, how to take care of animals, learning pet behavior, learning, you know, pet language. Like, you know, if you really watch a dog or a cat, like, you can see just different things, like the way they hold their ears or their tail or their eyes, or if they're licking or yawning, those are all, you know, that's all their language and way they're expressing either their stress or their comfort or their happiness or their calmness or their fear, kind of thing. And so those are things that PSI is always doing trainings on, so that you learn. We're not just the high school kid walking dogs in the neighborhood.
I was just going to use that exact example or one like it, because it sounds like for people, especially 25 years ago in particular, but even more recently, you know, that start this kind of business, a lot of people don't even think necessarily probably about insurance, although obviously that has to come up pretty quickly. But just some of the other things you just described about behavioral things, mm-hmm. what to look for, and just other business-minded things, just to make the thing more solid and successful.
Right.
I'm sure it's like been critical to a lot of people over the years.
Yeah. And then another thing PSI does is they have created such a great community. They have an online community where we, a couple Facebook groups and Instagram, they do trainings on there too. But then they have just like where it's just you can chat and talk with other pet sitters all over the world. I mean, where you can ask questions like, I have this situation, or I have this dog that's doing this. Is that normal? Or how would you handle this kind of thing? And that is invaluable because we're all independent. You know, we're all independent businesses of our own. And to have that resource of being able to call on other pet sitters in the same industry and the same profession that know what you're going through and know the situation, that part has been so helpful. And so just, the value there is huge.
Well, that's really cool. So I'd be curious to know, what are your expectations for your stint as Pet Sitter of the Year? Do you anticipate, for example, a boon to your business and your bookings over there at Leash for Lease? Or is this sort of victory kind of considered more ceremonial in some ways?
I'm hoping to just kind of build more awareness of the professional pet sitter.
Of
course, a boom to the business would be, you know, that's always nice. But also, and then just kind of celebrating throughout the year this, and then our 25th anniversary, we turn 25 this coming August. And so, lots to celebrate this year. But just kind of bringing awareness to, you know, the difference of just, my neighbor can watch my dog, or, you know what, I'm going to hire this other company. They have a team. They're going to be available. If they say they're going to be available and they're going to be there. If they're one person gets sick, somebody else can fill in. And just kind of the difference between, you know, hiring and the benefits of hiring a professional company who's doing pet sitting.
It really makes a big difference in terms of credibility, because, as we said before, so many more pets are around, so many more people looking for help with dog walking or pet sitting when they go away. So I'm sure, like, what they're looking for, you know, something like this probably, you know, cuts short some of the time of figuring out who to hire if it's got the kind of background with PSI. And by the way, the woman happens to be Pet Sitter of the Year. I think that's a pretty safe bet, probably, to put our animals with this weekend or whatever. So,
yeah.
And as far as Pet Sitter of the Year, is that just, like, chosen and then you're just informed that that was it? Or do people vie for it in any way or run for it, sort of? Or how does that determine from year to year who the next pet sitter of the year is?
Oh, yeah. So we in order to be considered for the position, or not the position, the award, they do it annually. And I think it was started kind of in the summer, late summer. They ask for pet sitting companies to submit a package or a profile. Basically, there were some questions I had to answer. They wanted, just like about my company, specifics about the company, details like, how long have we been in business? How long or how many employees do we have? If we have a team, how many employees do we have? It wasn't based on anything like number of clients or annual revenue. I don't even think they asked those questions, but it was more like your philosophy on pet sitting and running a professional business. So you have to answer all those questions, submit a couple pictures, and then it asks for, or they ask for three recommendations, and they wanted two current clients of ours. So I did that, and I don't know what my clients said. I didn't read what they did, because that's all confidential. Like, if they contact the clients themselves, and then the clients reply to them. So I'm not totally sure what they said, but I guess it was nice enough to get to the next round.
Yeah.
And then another person who you might want to, another person, so the third recommendation. And for that one, I did my longest employee. I thought she would have a good sense of me, and also she's been working for me for about 8 years now. So, get a good sense of me and the company and just, again, what we do and our philosophies and stuff.
Sure.
So that gets all up for consideration. And then, if you make the next round, they narrow it down to the top five, which I did, and they notify us then. I think that was in November. They let us know, and then we were supposed to submit another, like a little video, like it was like a 1 or 2 minute video, just kind of introducing us, so they see you more than just a picture or just the words. Yeah, and talking a little bit more about your company and what you do. And then had to kind of answer another couple questions on just your philosophy on what you would do if you were to be named Pet Sitter of the Year. Like, what would you want to focus on for the year? So, and then that goes up for another review. And I know that Beth, she's the president at PSI. She does say, she has mentioned before that she's not part of the panel. I think it's totally independent. I don't think it's any of the employees or staff at PSI are on the panel. So that makes it nice, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that feels like fair, right?
Seems very fair and very thorough process to arrive at that year's Pet Sitter of the Year. So.
For sure. I don't think it's just, throw some names in a hat and pull it out. Like, there's definitely, matrix that they follow and procedures or things that you have to check off. So, yeah, I think it's pretty legit. I feel pretty honored that I was picked because I've been hesitant. I've known about this for years, the award, but I just thought, I'm little, and because some pet sitting companies, are pretty big. They have staff of 25 plus people, and they service a huge area, and they're making a lot more money than I am. And I just thought, I'm just kind of small out here. But I thought it would be fun to do and see, just to see if it would go anywhere. And here it is.
That's great.
It's been really fun. Yeah.
Congratulations. That's really cool. So we're kind of in the last couple of minutes or so, Amy, and I'm going to ask a couple more questions, including at least one that came in via email. Just generally, what's essential to be a good pet sitter, do you think, you found over your 25 years?
Essential to being a good pet sitter? Oh, that's a great question. I would for sure say, a love of animals. I don't think you have to love all animals, but I think just love animals in general and respect them and who they are. And then it's just a sense of wanting to learn and learn about them because the more that we know, I just think as time is going on, we're just learning so much more about them and their tendencies and their personalities and all that they do. I was listening to you, your other show about elephants a couple weeks ago, and just all that we don't know about animals and all that we know and all that we don't know. There's just so much more. So I think just always kind of wanting to learn more, and is that's my biggest thing. It's just, I just, there's never, we're never going to know it all.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely kind of a through line of education that seems to run through your story and the, surprisingly, the leash for lease story, which is like you had a certain educational background when you switched careers, and you were well served by that, and on your own and through kind of the guidance of PSI, there's just always an emphasis on learning more. So it just seems like that's kind of a running through line there. So So one of the questions that came in by email was, what's the strangest pet you have cared for?
Strangest, maybe most unique. I guess I would say maybe a sugar glider.
Okay.
It was probably, yeah, which are, you know, little flying squirrels.
Sure.
They're tiny little things, and they, but they are the, they're super nocturnal. So sadly, when we would take care of them, we didn't have much to do with them because we weren't there overnight. So they were usually sleeping in a little hammock, but you, or maybe not even sleeping, but hunkered down, because we could take that little hammock out and take them out and, you know, pet them on their head. And they they are the softest fur in maybe the world. They are just so sweet, and they're so tiny, and they hardly weigh anything, but they're very sweet. So I would say maybe that's my most unique.
Okay.
But you know what, I'm just gonna, I say this all the time to people, like, you could have a room full of yellow labs, and you know, Labrador retrievers, they're just happy and friendly, but you could have a room full of them and you would have a room full of different personalities. Everybody, every dog is so different, even though, even the same breed, and they have the same tendencies and the same, you know, characteristics, but they still have different personalities and their own uniqueness. And that's what I kind of love about this. Even after 25 years, yes, we take care of lots of doodles and lots of labs and golden retrievers and what have you, but they're all different and they're all just amazing.
Well, that seems like the perfect point at which to leave us. That sounds just ideal. So again, we've been speaking with Amy Munns. The company name is Leash for Lease. The website is leash4lease.com if you want to find out more or follow up with any questions you might have for Amy about pet sitting or what criteria to look for when you're finding maybe a new pet sitter or dog walker of your own, et cetera. So, Amy, thank you so much for joining us on Talking Animals. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and I congratulate you once again on your nice award.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun. Thank you so much.
Good. Thanks again.
Okay.
Bye-bye. You know, when I'll speak with Natalie Connor, who owns Mutts and Martinis, a dog-friendly sports bar in St. Petersburg, offering other amenities as well, and regularly hosting an array of events, including the Small Dog Race Weekend, taking place January 24th and 25th. We'll hear more when Natalie Connor joins in a moment on Talking Animals on WMNF. Right now, though, let's step into the Comedy Corner with a portion of a piece by Dimitri Martin called Pets to Cats. Today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WNF.
Pets are animals that are not delicious. I don't think that was by accident. We probably tried to eat all of them. Like, okay, these don't taste good. We'll give them first names and sweaters. We'll hang out with them. We're going to eat everything else that we can. Asia, you guys have so many people over there. If you need to eat some of these too, no judgment. You can eat the friends if you have to. We even eat birds. We eat birds. That's, I can't even imagine how that started. Somebody's like, you see that flying up there? I'll put that in my mouth. That looks good. You can eat that with the feathers. No, I'll take them off. I'll do some to it, but yeah, I'll eat it. We even eat the unfertilized eggs of the birds. It's like, when does life begin? I don't know. Breakfast? Scramble that thing up. Seems like there's a fine line between having a hostage and having a... I messed up my joke. It's only got like 15 words in it and I couldn't get them right. I felt confident, too, while I was saying it. I was like, between a hostage and a hostage. Wait a minute. seems like there's a fine line between having a pet and having a hostage from a different species. Yeah, that's it. I can fix it. I can fix it. You go to somebody's house, they're like, close the door, he'll get out. Close the door, he'll get out. Okay. What kind of relationship do you have with this dog? Dog comes up. He's not looking. Open the door. Let me out. Come on, come on. Let me out. Open the door now. This woman put sunglasses on me. Will you open the goddamn door?
All right, that was Dimitri Martin in today's Comedy Corner with part of a piece called Pets to Cats, taken from his album Live at the Time. And trying to reach Natalie Connor to talk about Mutts and Martinis and their event coming up this coming weekend, the Small Dog Race Weekend, happening January 24th and 25th. And so I'll be right back perhaps with Natalie in 1 second. It's Talking Animals on WMN. All right, we found Natalie. We got Natalie right here live on Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Natalie.
Morning.
So let's start off with having you describe Mutts and Martinis. It's really my kind of combination. I know that much.
Yes, that's what I try to build for everybody, a safe place for your dogs to come and play and also a fun place for the adults. You can have some adult cocktails or mocktails. And you can also grab some of the food that we offer here at Mutts and Martinis. And you can let your dog play and engage with your dog while you're having a couple cocktails and watching one of our 28 sports TVs also.
Wow, it sounds like it's equipped for everybody, dog and human both.
You got it.
So, you know, yeah. Bars that welcome dogs typically have vaccination requirements of one kind or another. What kind of shots are required for dogs entering Mutts and Martinis?
Just the standard shots, Bordetella, Parvo, Distemper, Rabies.
Okay, cool. And as we touched on, and you sort of touched on as well, you organize a lot of events there. We're here today chiefly to highlight the Small Dog Race Weekend on January 24th and 25th. But any others you want to mention as well at the moment?
Well, you know, we're always trying to come up with creative and fun things for the dogs and for the people. We just finished our second annual chili cook-off contest on Sunday for the adults. But our big event that I'm just now setting up for is the Doggy Olympics, which will start, I believe it's the 14th and 15th of February. It might be the 15th and 16th. No, it's 14th and 15th of February. And we're going to do that in conjunction with the Olympics. The Olympics kick off February 6th, I believe it is. And we're going to have dog agility races, walk over the dog ramps, the weave, the poles, the jump, everything. And it's going to be a lot of fun over here. It's Mutts and Martinis. That entire weekend will be specializing for dog Olympics. And what you said, Small Dog Races is coming up. And that is the 24th and 25th of January. And we put the dogs in a little, kind of like how they line them up in the horse races. And then we raise the little chute-like thing, and then they run down, and the adults are right there trying to get them to race as fast as they possibly can.
Wow. And so I know it's just for small dogs. What constitutes a small dog for this extravaganza? Like, what's the cutoff point breed-wise to still qualify?
Well, it's not really per breed. It's only because of the arena that we have right now set up for racing. The big dogs would just race it too fast.
I see.
So I'm setting up another opportunity, so I'll be changing that in the near future. But right now, it's a good little racetrack for the small dogs. And that's really, I don't know, dogs under maybe 30 pounds. You know, we got Frenchies are fast, the Corgis, you know. It's not really, you know, we can't have a lab up against a Corgi. You know,
yeah, not, it's so not a fair fight at that point, Yeah.
And it's fun. I mean, we interview the racers and we ask them, hey, where are you from and how many races have you won? I mean, it's just a lot of fun.
And, well, only small dogs can compete. I think all dogs are welcome to be there with their humans.
I mean, we welcome all dogs. any given time. This just happens to be an event just for the small dogs. The Doggy Olympics is going to be for every breed.
That's
every
great.
Size of dog.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one, including that it overlaps Valentine's Day, too. So that's going to be great on every level.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, this sounds really fun. So this is a Mutz & Martini's, 2900 Central Avenue, St. Pete, 33712, if people are GPSing. And how would they, is there website information on the Small Dog Race weekend?
Go on, you can always follow along on our Instagram page, our Facebook page.
Okay.
Those really highlight a lot of the events that we do. We've got live music tonight. I mean, it's just on and on and on, different types of things we do.
Sure.
For adults and humans, once again. I mean, you're welcome to come here, even if you don't have a dog, and I want to make sure that everybody understands that. We are a full liquor bar offering food, so everybody's welcome to come here, with or without a dog. But we do a lot of different events all the time.
That sounds great. Well, we'll look forward to getting over there for one or more of the events in the coming days. This has been Natalie. Thank you so much, Natalie Connor from Mutz & Martini's. And we'll see you over there
soon. Thank you very much, Duncan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Best of luck.
Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Myra Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, it's The Scoop, WNF's brief news recap. Then we shift back to music programming with Sam Vaughn holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C hosting the Traffic Jam from 3 to 6 p.m. And it just continues with more great music after that here on 88.5 WNF. So we hope you'll join us next Wednesday here for another edition of Talking Animals. And you can always check out talkinganimals.net, where there's links to all our social media pages, archives, and podcasts from just about every show we ever done from the beginning, and all kind of other good information. So I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind, animals. Be kind, others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Wiki Watching, and beyond. Stay tuned for NPR News headlines and the conversation after that. More great stuff here on WNF. Thanks again.